But if y'all want to read with me, it's going to be in 2 Samuel chapter 11. When a thought becomes a desire. Give y'all a second to turn there. We'll start in verse number 1. It says, "And it came to pass, after the year was expired, at the time when the kings go forth to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him, and all Israel, and they destroyed the children of Ammon and besieged Rabbah. But David tarried at Jerusalem. And it came to pass in an eventide that David arose from off his bed and walked upon the roof of the king's house. And from the roof he saw a woman washing herself, and the woman was very beautiful to look upon. And David sent and inquired after the woman. And one said, 'Is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?' And David sent messengers and took her. And she came in unto him, and he lay with her. For she was purified from her uncleanness, and she returned into her house. And the woman conceived, and sent and told David, and said, 'I am with child.'" And save us some time, but I was just going to skip on down to verse 26, the end of that chapter. I mean, most of us pretty much know how the story goes anyways. But in verse 26 it says, "And when the wife of Uriah heard that Uriah her husband was dead, she mourned for her husband. And when the mourning was past, David sent and fetched her to his house, and she became his wife and bare him a son. But the thing that David had done displeased the Lord." And it just seems like such an awkward message for the way that the service has been so far. It seems like God's really come by and blessed and touched. And I really didn't feel like I was going to have the chance to preach tonight. I felt like God was going to take over and He was going to have His way. But I don't know if somebody needs to hear this tonight or what. But I felt like God put this on my heart for tonight and that He would have His way. And at the very beginning of that chapter where we started reading that, it talks about how the kings and all the kings went out to battle, but David sent Joab, and it said that he tarried at Jerusalem. He didn't go, and that he stayed behind for some reason. I guess it doesn't really say why right here, but all the kings went out to battle but David, and he should have been out in the field leading his troops on to battle like what God had called him to do. He'd made him the king over that nation for a reason. And He had called him to be the king to those people, to Israel, and to lead them into battle. And had he really been doing his duty, he would have been out of the way of the temptation that came his way that day. You know, and it doesn't really go into great detail why he stayed. But in verse number 2, it says that as it came to pass in an eventide that David arose from off his bed and walked upon the roof of the king's house. You know, to me, that makes me think that he was just taking it easy that day. He was just taking a break from this battle. You know, I'll just step back. I'll let my troops go out there. I'll let my generals handle it. And I'll just stay back here at the fort and hold up the fort for a while. And I just got to thinking about that. You know, if it said in the evening time when he arose off his bed, to me, that makes me think that that's probably sometime in the evening, you know, it was around supper time, that he decided to get off his bed. You know, where was he at the rest of the day? Did he get out of his bed to take his morning prayer or his noon prayer? You know, if it was like Daniel, if he prayed three times a day, you know, he's missed his first two prayers. So, I mean, you think about it, that he's already missed two prayers. You imagine the state that he's in. Imagine the state that we get in whenever we don't pray like we should. And we'll get ourselves in this exact same situation. David could have went to the top of that roof, and he could have stopped there. He could have looked to the left or looked to the right. He could have saw her, but he didn't have to desire after her. He didn't have to inquire who she was and what she was doing there. He could have left it right there on the roof and went back to his, back inside to do whatever. But he didn't stop there. That was the thought. The thought entered his mind right there. What would it be like? You know, what would it be like? I mean, I can see her here. I know what she looks like. But what would it be like to be with her, to know her? And it didn't stop there. It went into being a desire. And in that day, it said that, it said that from the roof he saw a woman washing herself, and she was very beautiful to look upon. You know, many times you see a girl half-dressed come by, and just because you look at her doesn't mean that you want her. It's whenever you take a double take. You know, I can just see in my mind's eye this situation. I see David, you know, he's getting out of bed. He's, you know, shaking himself. I don't know what he's done that day or if he just decided to sleep in, take it easy. But I see him getting up, you know, rubbing his eyes, going to the sink, you know, splashing some water on. Because the only way I can understand the story is to try and picture it in my mind's eye. And I can just see him getting up. I can see him going out to the roof, you know, stretching. He's looking out over his kingdom. And all of a sudden, he sees this beautiful woman right over there taking a bath. And he doesn't have to stop there. He could have just looked on and just went on to, you know, thank God for what you've blessed me with. But he didn't stop there. I mean, he just fixed it on her for a while. And then I could just feel that, you know, the devil just, I mean, you, forgive me for being, you know, if you think this is worldly, but cartoons, hell, you see a little devil pop up on your shoulder. And, you know, you got the angel on one side and the devil on the other. Yeah, on. I can just see David, he's just turning his ear to the devil, just listening to him. Amen. You know, what would it be like? Right, you know, what would it be like? You know, you could have her. You're the king. God set you over all these people. He's given these people to you. You can have anything you want. It doesn't matter if she's married. You can have her. And I can just see that in our lives, that's the way the devil teaches us and he talks to us. And so we can do whatever we want to do because we're our own man. And that's what the world teaches us nowadays, that we don't have to rely on a God. A God may exist, or a creator may exist, but we don't have to rely on Him. We change our own destinies, and we make ourselves what we are. You know, but David really didn't have that. He did have that choice of deciding what he wanted to do that day. And that's what one writer wrote, that thoughts come crowding in so fast upon me that my only difficulty is to choose or to reject. I mean, whatever you want to call it for this situation, because David had that choice. You know, he could have decided whether or not to just pass that thought on and just let it go on by, or whether he was going to apply that to his life and just say, well, I think I'll find out who she is. And even there, he could have found out who she was and make him one of his wives, and that would have been all right if she'd have been unmarried. But he didn't stop there either. He found out. If you go on and read, it says, and David sent and inquired after the woman. And one said, is not this Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite? I mean, that should have been a red flag right there. One of the servants that was probably with him when he was praying about a battle and God give him the victory over it. You know, there's one of his servants right there saying, isn't she married? You know, isn't that one of that's married to Uriah the Hittite? And it goes on in the next verse. It says, David sent messengers and took her. So it didn't matter what that he said. He already had his mind made up what he was going to do. And so many times in our lives, we've got our minds made up of what we're going to do. And we try and cover it up. Most of the time, David didn't even cover it up. I mean, he was the king of a nation, and he knew the people were going to be watching him, and he didn't care. He went ahead and done it anyways, and he had to pay for the consequences. And he actually probably thought he would have been able to get away with it for a while if she hadn't conceived a child. And so he tried to cover it up by having Uriah come back from the battle and, you know, saying, you know, go lay with your wife, you know, go, you know, get you something to eat, just kind of refresh yourselves. And that way, that if something would happen and the story would come out that she was pregnant, that he could say, well, maybe it's Uriah's. You know, it's not mine, because, you know, he come back in from battle. He was on leave for that weekend. He could have, you know, it could be his. But God saw fit to take care of that and teach David a lesson out of it. And right now his thought has become and turned into a desire where he didn't really care what he thought or what anybody thought about it. He was going to do it anyhow, and he did his best to cover it up. And if it wasn't a bad enough sin at all to, you know, commit adultery and to fornicate, to have lust for that woman, he killed her husband in the process so he could have her. That's what I had another quote from another person, and it talked about a desire. It says, the desire is that internal act, which by influencing the will, makes us proceed to action. You know, David had already committed so far that he had to go on and complete what he had already started. But, you know, we have that choice. We can do, even if it's the smallest thing, you know, if it's something we wear, if it's nail polish, if it's, you know, maybe I will look good in this, maybe not. If it's a pair of shorts or a tight T-shirt or anything like that, you know, it's the exact same thing, exact same situation. You know, that thought enters your mind. You know, what would it be like to do this? You know, we always consider us people that have been raised in church to be sheltered and that we haven't really been through a lot, or we haven't really done so much things as what, you know, Jake and Bub and all them that got away from the Lord for a little while. You know, but the battles mainly that we faced are mind battles. And it's a lot of the things, you know, what would it be like? And what could it be like if we decided to just give everything up, to just fold up and quit and go taste these things of the world and go experience them for ourselves? What would it really be like? And I couldn't hardly get Tara off my mind thinking about this message, you know, because, you know, she's probably out there. She had, I don't know when it happened, you know, she just some of the things she had told us is that, you know, she had been able to get through for so many months and was praying, and it's like she never really got anywhere. And it just began to roll over in my mind, you know, what thought entered her mind that caused her to want those things out there? You know, what was that attracted her that became a desire for her to leave the house of God, you know, and to leave all these good things behind? And I had another place I was wanting to read. It's in the first part of Genesis. I mean, it's a very familiar story. All the things that I have for tonight are real simple. So, yeah, I mean, you really don't even have to turn there. You can probably quote it. But in Genesis chapter 4, it talks about Cain and Abel and how that situation there, how that God had moved upon Abel and Cain, and he had them had, you know, they brought an offering to him. And in verse 3 it says, "In process of time it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord, and Abel he also brought of the firstlings of the flock and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering, but unto Cain and to his offering he had no respect. And Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. And the Lord said unto Cain, Why art thou wroth, and why is thy countenance fallen? If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted? And if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door, and unto thee shall be his desire, and thou shalt rule over him." And then in verse 8 it says, "And Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass, when they were in the field, that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and slew him." You know, it all started with that thought. You know, and it's so simple. I don't know if you're really getting what I'm saying, because it's probably not making any sense. I feel like Brother Mark up here, you know, you're all sitting on me. But I can understand why. But it says right here, you know, I've got three brothers, and if that's not the hardest thing to get along with, I don't know what is. And that's nothing against them, you know, I feel like I'm the one at fault most of the time for causing any kind of trouble. But, you know, one thing that does happen between brothers is you get a competitiveness. And you want to say, you know, look at what I've got versus what you've got. Or look what I've done versus what you've done. And it felt like that's the root of the evil and the bitterness that got into Cain's heart. That one thought, you know, look what I've, you know, I've worked the ground. I've done these things. He was the tiller of the ground. That was his calling. And, you know, Abel's calling was to be the shepherd to the flock and to the field and to take care of the, you know, the sheep. And that was his offering, was to be, you know, to bring the firstlings of the flock, as it says, and the fat thereof. And it says right here, "And the Lord said unto Cain, you know, why art thou wroth?" You know, he didn't have respect for his offering because the way of that he brought it. He brought his second best. He didn't bring the best thing that he had to the Lord. You know, he brought the fruit of the ground, whereas Abel brought the best that he had to the Lord and gave it as a burnt offering. But it says that Cain had his offering and he had no respect, and that he was very wroth and his countenance fell. You know, he had the choice right then to give it over to the Lord and say, "Lord, what do I need to do to mark up?" You know, but it didn't stop there. He kept on going with it, and he let that bitterness get into his heart. And a lot of times we'll be stubborn and we'll let that pride get in there that, "Lord, you know, I've made a mistake." But it's like we won't stop there. We won't let it go. We'll keep going on with it because we don't want to accept the fact that we've made a mistake. And it says, "And the Lord said unto Cain, you know, why art thou wroth? And why is thy countenance fallen? You know, if thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted?" You know, if you would have made it right, even though it wasn't exactly what I asked for, if you would have made it right, that I would have accepted it. I would have given it all back to you, and we'd have been fine. But it didn't stop there. He let it go, and he ended up, you know, killing his brother in the process because of that root of bitterness. He had a thought come into his mind, "Well, if I take out Abel, if I get him out of the way, then God will be, you know, more willing to accept my offering, because he can see what I've got to offer. Where Abel's not around anymore, he won't have anything to offer." But God knew exactly what he was thinking in his mind, and what the devil had convinced him to do. And it said right here that if thou doest not well, that sin lieth at the door. You know, and it. Sin lieth at the door. I guess I never realized what I was going to preach until right now. You know, one little simple thought can take us out if we let it become a desire. You know, sin lieth at the door. He knew exactly what he was going to be doing. He knew exactly what Cain had thought over in his mind. And he knew that the first chance he got, he was going to take out Abel. And it says, and Cain talked with Abel. I could just picture this. I could see him, you know, standing there talking about it after this, you know, the offering and everything had went through. And Cain and Abel were standing there talking. And that, you know, Abel, as humble as he could have been, was telling him, you know, if you'll just do this, you know, you'll get the same blessing that I've got. That God will take your offering and he'll multiply it the way he has mine if you'll just give it all to him and not be bitter. And not let, you know, not let the fact that he chastised you, you know, keep you from coming back to him. But he done it for a reason. He done it for your own good. And I can see Cain just not paying any attention to him, just, you know, brushing him off, just letting it go. And the first chance he got when they were in the field, that he rose up against him and he slew him. And then he knew he was going to get caught, but he tried to bury him to get rid of it. And that's what we see, two different examples here, that you've got David, who made things right with the Lord. In Psalms 32 and 51, those chapters there, you know, it talks about how that he had repented for what he had done. But Cain never really repented over what he had done. He just kept getting more bitter. And as you go on and read down in that chapter, he said right here, the Lord, that in verse 13, my punishment is greater than I can bear. You know, thou hast driven me out this day from the face of the earth, and from thy face shall I be hid, and I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond in the earth. And it shall come to pass that every one that findeth me shall slay me. And in verse 16 it says, and Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod on the east of Eden. And I got to look up some of the meanings of the different names. And I looked up Nod to see what that meant, and it meant wandering. Like he was wandering around, and that... He ended up in the land of Nod, which was east of Eden, where, you know, God, you know, sent out Adam and Eve, and he put the cherubims and the sword there, the flaming sword. But of all the places, he chose the land of Nod, which meant wandering, which meant he was going to be restless, you know, for the rest of his days, because he walked out of the presence of the Lord. And I feel like there's so many of us that sometimes, if we're not careful of what we're doing, that we'll say that God can't move on it, and that we'll walk out of the presence of the Lord. And just turn it over to Him, or turn it over to our own selves, and not let Him have His way in our lives. And that's where we end up. We just end up wandering without any kind of purpose. We just wander aimlessly in life without the Lord. You know, because where would we be without Him? That's what, nowhere do you ever really read that he returned unto the Lord. And you know that he never really found rest anywhere else. But I was just going to read a few scriptures out of Psalms 51, where it talked about where David repented. And you know, it said in the first verse, it said, have mercy upon me, O God, according to thy loving kindness, according unto the multitude of thy tender mercies, blot out my transgressions. I just want to skip through and just read some of the highlight verses. It says, created me a clean heart and renew a right spirit within me. It said, restore unto me the joy of thy salvation and uphold me with thy free spirit. And the sacrifices of God are a broken spirit and a broken and a contrite heart. O God, thou wilt not despise. You know, so we don't have to end up like Cain is. I don't know. I feel like I'm not making any sense. But we don't have to end up like what Cain was. We can stop the thought before it turns into a desire, and let it get out of the way, or let it get out of control. We can stop it at the very beginning if we'll just give it all to the Lord. And you know, we don't have to end up like Cain. We don't have to end up wandering restless for the rest of our lives. You know, wondering what kind of potential we may have had before if we were just giving it to the Lord then. And David had the privilege and the opportunity of making things right with the Lord. It took a prophet, Nathan, coming to him and telling him that he needed to realize, you know, what he had done, and that this is an abomination in the eyes of the Lord, for him to realize that what he had done was going to cost not only himself but his entire nation. You know, some of the things that they had been given, some of the blessings that they had, they wouldn't have any longer. But he had the privilege of talking to the Lord and making things right, whereas Cain didn't. He didn't take advantage of what the Lord had blessed him with.
But
many times we let our pride of making a mistake become a mountain between us and the Lord. And I feel like that's the way that Cain was. You know, David, he swallowed his pride and he overcome that mountain. Where Cain, he didn't. You know, he decided that he wasn't going to make things right, that he had messed up, you know, far beyond what would ever be repented of. And that he decided that he would just go out of the presence of the Lord, that things would be forgotten, that he could go on with the rest of his life. You know, but it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. You know, a lot of times we'll just let ourselves just slowly slide backward. We'll just slowly let ourselves, we'll stop praying, we'll stop reading. Or we'll be like, you know, David was that day, you know, lay in bed half the day and just not pray the morning prayer, not pray the noon prayer, not pray over our food, you know, not pray over anything. And before you know it, we're caught up in a whole whirlwind of trouble and we don't see how to get ourselves out of it. But if we would just realize that if we can stop the thought before it becomes a desire, if we'll just realize that we don't have to go that far, we don't have to take it a step that far, where we can just make things right with the Lord in the beginning and He'll forgive us of it to begin with. You know, and it doesn't take adultery or it doesn't take murder, anything like that to send you to hell. You know, the slightest thing in the sight of the Lord can take you out. And I'm just afraid that some of the people sitting in our own congregation, that if we're really not careful, you know, that we'll let ourselves be found wanting. You know, that we'll let ourselves be found, we'll still be here in the last days. And mainly because we've let our thoughts come into desires, or we're worried about what people think about us, what people, you know, think when they look at us, you know, and it, a lot of people don't realize that is their testimony. You know, how you're dressed and how you live is your testimony. You know, what you say and how you act is your testimony. Amen. And a lot of times, that's what I've been carrying my Bible here to work lately. And it seems like I haven't really had a whole lot of time to read it, but just the fact that I've been carrying it, people have asked me questions and they've said stuff to me. They've asked different things about our church. And I felt like I've really had a chance to witness to those people. But just simply by carrying it, not even, you know, breaking it open to them or talking to them about it, about anything I may have read that day, but just carrying it, the simple fact that they would ask me a question, you know, why do you carry it? Are you some kind of preacher? Or, you know, what kind of church do you go to? What kind of things do you all believe? And you just have to be careful what you talk to them about. And that's why I ended up talking to one guy that I work with. He told me that he had been up to one of the churches in our area that claimed to be, I guess, a Pentecostal church, and he had talked about it was his father and now ex-wife that had been to that church, and he started going with them a little bit, and he liked the preaching. And then one night he ended up seeing somebody that had been outside smoking, cussing, not acting like they should have been, and they come inside the church house and they went up to get prayed for. And they just started flopping all over the place, and, you know, claiming that they were speaking in tongues. And I mean, that really scarred him. And he was so bitter towards having any kind of conversation with me, because of how I believed that I believed in it. He would thought that for sure it was wrong because of that one person. You know, and I just got a chance to witness to him that we don't have to base our opinions by one person or by one church. You know, that if we seek the Lord for ourselves with our whole heart, you know, that we'll find the best way to live for Him, you know, for ourselves. And that we don't have to let just the minute things, you know, separate us from what He's called us to do and where He wants us to be. And, I mean, if we just realize that we don't have to let one thought, you know, turn into a desire. You know, if we miss one church service, you know, if we miss one church service, or if we let ourselves just dwindle away to nothing, if you're not praying, if you're not reading, if you're not keeping up with what you should be doing, then it's so easy to, you're leaving yourselves open for trouble. And, you know, you're going to be less likely, what David was, if he hadn't prayed that day, he was less likely to rebuke the devil for coming and, you know, perching on his shoulder and telling him, you know, just to pursue what he had already thought in his mind, instead of just dismissing it. When it first came up, he decided that he was just going to keep going with it. And if we would truly let God have His way in our lives, we wouldn't have to worry about those problems. We wouldn't have to worry about the temptations and the troubles that come our way because we've already been prayed up. You know, like Brother Larry says so many times, you know, a lot of people don't give him any credit for anything, but you know, he does say that we need to keep, you know, he always talks about how he prays when the sun was shining. You know, and that's the key to it all. If you pray to God, you know, when the sun's shining, you won't find yourself on a rooftop, you know, lusting after other women. You know, you won't find yourself in a dressing room, you know, trying on a pair of pants and looking to see how you look. You know, you'll be willing to give God, you know, all the praise for what He's done for you. You know, if you just realize that just one thought could be enough to take it out, to take you out, to let you have just enough of a good time, a good feeling, just enough pleasure, you know, to pull you out of the house of God. You know, just that one thought, if you just rebuke it when it comes to your mind and when the things pass through your mind that you know you shouldn't be thinking about, if you just rebuke them, then you don't have anything to worry about. You just plead the blood and God will take care of it. He's already paid the price for you. So you don't have to worry about, you know, fighting that battle. You know, you may not have to do it. You may have to fight the battle more than once, but God's given you victory once. Why can't He do it again? You know, like Jake said so many times, you know, how can we tie the hands of God when He preached the other night? If we would just sell out to the Lord, you know, we wouldn't have those problems to worry about. We wouldn't have that temptation. You know, if we would just realize that even though this thought did cross His mind, and those things may cross your mind, you know, many times I had to battle with sports. That was one of the things I really like to do, and even now I like to play basketball and volleyball and all that. And I had different people when I was in school ask me why I didn't play for the school team. And, you know, like Brother Jason's got his testimony of how, you know, God delivered him out of it. I just know that God had a bigger plan for my life, and I'm just so glad that I didn't get wrapped up in that mess. And that He sent by, you know, different ones and brought us to a church to where we have the privilege that we do have to live for the Lord, that we don't have to get wrapped up in the things of this world, you know, because we can't have both. You know, we can't have the good things of this life, you know, such as serving the Lord and living for God and feeling that sweet spirit down in our heart, you know, and at the same time go out and run a football and just get so wrapped up in it. We can't have the best of both worlds. You know, we've got to make up our mind who we're going to serve. And just one thought can be the one thing that takes you out. And I really don't know where to go from here. That's why I'm trying to listen to the Holy Ghost and obey the Lord. But I don't want to get in the way of it either. But I just felt like today praying that God spoke to my heart for this message. And I didn't know who was going to be here. I didn't know who wasn't going to be here. I didn't know how the service was going to go. And the way it looked, that God had already had a plan to begin with. He had already worked it out the way He wanted it. And I didn't have to get up here and ramble or waste any of your time. God had already worked it out. But apparently there's still people here that need a touch from God. And there's still people here, you know, that have let themselves slide back just enough, just a hair, that you've given in to a thought, you know, that 2 or 3 days ago you would have rebuked. You know, 2 or 3 days ago you would have, you know, before you even thought about it for very long, before you even entertained it, that you would have pushed it out of your mind and dismissed it. You know, I don't know why He put that on my heart for tonight, but I feel like there's somebody here that they've let themselves go. They've let that desire take control of them again. They've let it take hold of their life, and it's governing their life again. You know, and like David, he was stuck for so long. You know, he had done his best to cover up the mistake that he had made, and he only made it worse because he ended up killing one of his best men. That, I mean, Uriah wouldn't even go to his own house. He was so faithful and so loyal to David that he wouldn't even go to his own house. You know, when he had called him back from the battle, you know, supposedly to find out how the battle was going, but in actual he was covering up his tracks. You know, Uriah wouldn't even go to his own house. And I felt like that was the Lord, you know, keeping him from there. Why wouldn't he want to go see his wife, you know, unless there was an ultimate design taking place. But, you know, he didn't even go back to his own house, you know, to see his wife or anything. He was so loyal to the king that he was going to stay there and keep his mind on what on the battle and the things that was coming up, rather than go back home. And, you know, because his friends, his comrades were still in the battle. And he didn't want to let them go and him come back home and enjoy the fruits of, you know, their labor. He wanted to be there with them, even though shortly it was going to cost him his life. But he was willing to go to the depths for his king, and the king all along was willing to take his wife. And that's a sad situation to be in, you know, whether you're taking somebody's wife, like what David was in the literal sense, or you're doing your best to stay around the edges and to play around the edges, because both ways are going to take you to hell. Because you're not going to be, God's not going to take something into His kingdom that's tainted. He's not going to take something that's wrinkled or that's got a spot on it. You know, that He's paid the price for you to be saved and for you to have the privilege, you know, of living for Him. You know, and it just seems like so many times we take it for granted that He has paid this price for us. You know, that we don't even realize that what He has done for us already, you know, it's already been paid for. Every trouble and every trial that we're going to go through, He's already paid the price for us to have the victory over it. And you know, if we just come to the Lord and surrender all, that He would give us the victory over it. And it just seems like, you know, this just kept rolling over in my mind today. That's what it ended up working out where I was off today, and I could just really just try and meditate on the Lord and to focus on the service tonight. And it seems like that thought just kept rolling over in my mind, you know, that just when a thought becomes a desire, that when something takes a hold of you that you wouldn't have done a couple days ago, but you'd sit there and you entertain it and you play with it so long, you know, you're going to get bit. And that's what it was just burning in my heart today. I know you can't really tell. I'm probably putting you to sleep. But it really was. It was burning down deep in my heart that somebody needed help tonight. And that's the only thing I could think is somebody, God, you know exactly who they are. You send them by your way tonight, God. I don't have to preach to them. You know, they're probably not going to listen to me anyways. But God, if you can come by and you can move in the service, you know, that they would come up and get anointed, that they would get help, you know, that's all that matters anyways. That's all that matters, that they get through the victory over this desire, this thing that's tempting them, this thing that's pulling them away from you. And just so many times we'll let ourselves get in the way of that. And we'll worry about what people think about us. We'll worry about, well, they see me coming up here again. They know what I've been fighting with, and they're only going to think even less of me. But in the long run, you're doing yourself all the benefits. I mean, you're not hurting them, you know, by going to hell. You're taking yourself there. You know, you're not doing anything for them, but you're doing it for yourself. You know, I mean, so many times you talk about people that's getting blessed from other people getting help. You know, maybe they want to see, maybe they've fasted in the service for you. You know, maybe they've prayed, they've spent their time today with you on their mind, and you come to this service, and you thought that God didn't want to help you, or that you thought you'd just be in the way, and you didn't come up, and you end up going home missing out on a blessing. And before long, you know, you end up in the same situation as what Cain was in. You know, in the land of Nod, you know, where you're wondering, where you're trembling, you're shaking, you've got nowhere to go, but you've took yourself from the presence of the Lord. You know, God's given you that opportunity to come back to Him, and you just shun it. You know, and it says, you know, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. You know, I missed that banner being up here. I really did. I was getting to the place where I could almost have it memorized every night. I was just reading it and quoting it in different times. And that's what it just said, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. You know, if you love the world, you know, the love of the Father is not in you. And it says in it's in 1 John, the second chapter. I looked it up. And in verse 16, the second half of what was up there, it said, for all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, you know, it's not of the Father, but it's of the world. You know, so how can you say that you're putting something on, that you're doing this for your own personal benefit to make you feel better, when you're just trying to get somebody to look at you and to take notice of you? You know, if you'd really just worry about pleasing the Lord, then everybody else will fall into place, and everything else will be all right. You know, because if we'll realize that our thoughts, our minds should be focused on pleasing God, no matter what it is, no matter what our calling is, if it's to come and to sing, or if it's to come and hold the door for people to come in and go out of the house of God, you know, if we'd have our mind just to please Him, God, I'll do whatever it takes to please You, you know, where would we be at? You know, we wouldn't be sitting here tonight. We'd be up on our feet, you know, screaming, shouting, praising the Lord, doing our best to please Him. You know, because what privilege He's given us, you know, we ought to take advantage of it. And I mean, I find myself so many times not really paying attention. I mean, not intentionally doing it, but you just let yourself go and you realize that, you know, how did I get in this place? But then you go back to thinking, well, I didn't pray today, or I didn't pray last night, and I didn't pray, you know, before that. I didn't read anything. You know, you just go back and think of how you realize why you can't feel the Lord when you don't do anything to feel Him. You're not reaching after Him. You're not doing your best to please Him. And so many times he'll come by and touch you to encourage you. You know, I mean, you feel like you haven't done what you're supposed to do that day, but you'll come to church and God will he'll bless you. He'll move upon you to strengthen you, to encourage you to move up and to do what he have you to do. But I mean, so many times people take that the wrong way as well. I'm okay in what I'm doing. And I mean, it's not right. It's not right. Because before long you'll end up like Cain. You know, you'll end up so numb, I guess is the way to put it. So numb to the Lord. And if there's anything that I can do, you know, to help, I don't want to let anybody get to that place where they're numb in the Lord, where they've felt like they can't get past, you know, the things that they've done and the wrongs that they've committed. You know, even though they may have felt like they were done wrong to begin with, you know, God has a perfect plan and design for every life, and He knows why things happen, and they all happen for a reason, and they're all according to His plan. So, I mean, no matter what you may say or what you may do, He's going to take care of you, you know, one way or another. It's up to you whether you walk away from the presence of the Lord. And, you know, and if you do, send life at the door. I mean, it's simple. I mean, so many people like to make it complex, I mean, but it's a real simple message, you know. If you walk away from the Lord, you're taking yourself out of His hand, you know, then sin's going to lie at the door. And before long, you'll realize that you can't get out of it, that there's only one person you can call on to bring you out of it. And, something that really touched my heart was that seventh verse in Genesis. You know, if thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted? You know, if you're trying your hardest, if you're trying like Abel was to please the Lord, you know, and giving your best and your spare time, you're putting it towards, you know, working for Him and pleasing Him, you know, He's going to accept that. He's going to bless you for it. But if you're like Abel or you're like Cain and you just let, you know, your second best go, and you let that be what you're wanting to offer the Lord, is just when you've got free time or when you've got spare time, you know, why would you expect God to bless over that? You know, why would you expect Him to come by and touch you whenever you're not putting forth your effort, so why should He put forth His effort? And you know, and it says, if thou dost not well, you know, sin lieth at the door. So I mean, the choice is ours. It's up to us what we're going to do with it. I mean, and it says in that the end of that verse, it says, "Unto thee shall be his desire," you know, and that shalt rule over him. You know, that if you give place to that desire long enough, and that thought, and you entertain it long enough, it's going to rule you. It said it's going to consume you, and it's going to do it. You know, like it says, it'll rule over you, and that shall be, you know, your desire. And it's really sad to think that somebody could be sitting in the house of God, you know, with the service that we've had people coming up and getting prayed for. That needs healing, people coming up looking for miracles from God, you know, and then you've got people sitting back there. I mean, when sin's lying right outside their door, just one more step, you know, one more step they could take and they could be, I mean, who knows where they would end up? Who knows where the devil could take them or where they'd end up at? You know, but they just sit there and they just think that there's no way out of it, you know, that there's no way to really get free from that. And David really proved that. He proved that there was a way out. I mean, God had led him so far his entire life up until this point. You know, it just goes to show that, I mean, he's going to fight everybody the same. You know, David had paid the price, you know, so many times before that God had given him victory in battles, and he had, you know, given him the prophecy of things that were going to come. You know, but it just goes to show that if you're not praying and reading like you should, you know, that you're going to fall to temptation the same as anybody else can. You, none of us can live, or we can live above sin, but none of us without God can live above sin.
That's right.
And if we'll give it all to Him, that He'll take us through it all. And I don't know if they want to get a song or what. I don't know. It's 9:30. I've rambled for half an hour. That'll give us something to think about tonight, or something to gossip about for a little bit. But if they want to get a song, I don't know what to sing, or if they'll find something. But I mean, if you'll just realize that when a thought becomes a desire, you know, that's when you lose control. That's the point where you've got to give it over to the Lord, because you can't fight it for yourselves. You know, He has done what He's done. You know, He's blessed you. He's come by. He's touched you. And, you know, and you still turn Him away. And then you wonder why you can't feel Him anymore. You wonder why you can't get past that anymore. I mean, that's just what scared me about Tara when I was praying, is that, you know, what was she holding on to? Or, you know, what thought there was keeping her from getting through? You know, and eventually it consumed her. I mean, and it's a sad thing, and I don't mean to keep bringing it up. I know that, You know, everybody's in shock the same as what I was, but you know, the fact that consumes somebody, that you can let yourself get to that place where God, you know, He's dealt with you so many times, but you feel like you can't get past that. You feel like you've reached a plateau, you know, that you can't get above that anymore, that your prayers aren't, you know, are going any higher than the ceiling, you know, that the ceilings are brass, you know, and it's just so hard. You know, that God paid, He paid the blood, He paid with His life so we'd have this opportunity to live for Him. You know, and it's so sad that we'll just let ourselves get into that place where we will, where we won't look to Him. I mean, and that's exactly what He wants us to do. So many times He'll bring us down and He'll take us through troubles and trials and tribulations so that we'll realize how much we actually do need Him. And if we'll realize that just that one thought, you know, could be what takes us out, if we'll realize that, God, I can't do it on my own. You know, I've got to have You. I've got to have Your help to fight this because, God, I've tried it on my own and I can't do it. You know, I've got to have You to send the victory, to send, you know, this last wave of glory by my way to give me the victory over it. And I just thank God for what He's done so many times. I mean, in my life alone, I'm 20 years old. I haven't experienced much life or much of this life as what anybody else has. You know, even if it's just experience. But all I can really preach from is what's happened in my life and how I've had my own experiences to go on. And a lot of times I would just run from the Lord and just put it on the back burner and just say, you know, God, I'll deal with it later. It's something that I don't want to take the time to mess with right now. I'll give it a little bit of time and I'll worry about it later. You know, and before you realize it, it's all over the place. It's like a disease or something that spreads, that if you leave a sin on the back burner and you don't really, you know, pray through over something, you know, before you realize it, it's a whole lot worse than what you ever would have intended and what you've ever really planned on it being. You know, and that's where that desire comes over and it rules you. And like it said in that one quote, I really don't know who it was that wrote it. I didn't really say. But it said, desire is that internal act by, you know, which by influencing your will, you know, it makes you to proceed to action. I mean, and that's such a powerful statement for what a desire can do to you. You know, if you let it fester and you let it go, then before you realize you've got something on your hands you can't control. You've got something on your hands that only God can stop. Only God can put His hand on and touch. And I don't know if there's nobody at the piano to sing. But if you can get anything out of what I said, you know, just realize that God's here for you and that He knows exactly where you're at. He knows the thoughts. Because most of the time it's a trial or a temptation that He sent your way to see how much you really love Him. And if you'll just give yourself to Him and just leave it all to God, that He'll bring you through this. He'll bring it through and He'll give you the victory over something that you thought was impossible. You know, He'll give you the victory over something that you never thought you'd been able to beat. You know, God's right there and He knows exactly what it's going to take to get you through it. You know, like Jake preached, you know, He'll prove Himself. He'll show exactly Himself to you. I mean, He will make things so real that you can't explain it. You know, you can just say, well, God's the only one that brought me out of this. You know, and if you'll just give Him all the glory for it, you know, then He just might do it again for you. You know, and it's just so easy to take the glory for some of the things that God does for us because we realize that, you know, it's just so simple. To just say, well, I've prayed, I've stayed in church, you know, why shouldn't I be experiencing these things? But God wants us, for somebody like me, I've been in church since I was little. I mean, and I've actually been trying since I was about 13 probably. You know, in 7 years of serving the Lord, you would think that I've been, you know, I should be on top of a mountain or something somewhere. I should be a whole lot higher than what I am. But I mean, we realize that if we don't really serve the Lord with our whole heart, you know, it doesn't matter how long you come to church. If, I mean, you can be coming to church for 7 years or 7 months, but if you're not living for the Lord that entire time, you know, and serving Him with your whole heart, then you're going to be in the exact same situation as what you was before, you know, and you're going to be powerless. You're not going to have anything to show anybody, you know, to spread the word to anybody. You're not going to be able to have any kind of power with the Lord because He doesn't know you. You know, you come to Him when you feel like it, you know, and you won't let Him come to you. And if they've got a song, they can go ahead and play. But if there's anything you've got out of this, you know, just remember that don't let a thought become a desire. You can stop it before it gets that bad. If you just call upon the Lord and trust in His name, you know, He'll come by and He'll answer prayer. And it seems like so many times, so many of us have been here lately. There have been a lot of us missing. There's been a few gone that haven't been back. And I don't really know why, and it's none of my business. But I pray to God that whatever it is, you know, that He'll stir their heart to make them realize that they can't live without Him. You know, that He's the only one. He's the reason we live. I mean, if it wasn't for Him, you know, where would we be? You know, so many times, I don't know where I would be. You know, I definitely probably wouldn't be here up in this pulpit preaching. That's probably the last place I would be. But if they want to go ahead and start singing, if there's anybody that has a need in their heart or a need in their life that they want God to meet, you can come up here in this altar and pray in faith believing, and He'll send the victory. So if anybody will, or if everybody will, let's come around and pray tonight.